Well, shit. I guess I should share this.
Dolomite is my name. And rapping and tapping is my game. I'm the one that killed Monday and whooped Tuesday and put Wiz in the hospital. Called up Thursday to tell Friday not to burst Saturday on Sunday. Stuck my finger in the ground and turned the whole world around. Him went up in a jug and beat the hell out of him with a club. I took the day and brought back yesterday. Took the 4th of July and put it in June and made leap year jump over the moon. Muse has kicked me. They didn't bruise my hide. The rattlesnakes bit me. They just crawled off and died. I picked up the rock that killed the giant Goliath and whooped Nero's ass for setting Rome on fire. I ain't lying, baby. Y'all know, y'all have seen me and heard me rap with Big Daddy Kane, 2 Live Crew. Easy E, and you heard me do these nuts on Dr. Dre's album. But let me tell you, all those young men are rapping good. But when it comes down to rapping, I was through with it before they learned what to do with it.
All right.
So that was Rudy Ray Moore, and we listened to that because this is episode 87 of Unsocial Spectators, and we're going to talk about Disco Godfather from 1979.
Loved it. What'd you think, man?
And Rudy Ray Moore, basically the godfather of rap.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah. So this was ABC Monday Night or After School Special against Angel Dust.
Yes, it was. I know. Very strong drug message in this one. I watched the Rudy Ray Moore documentary after this, and he said this was the this movie made the least, and he goes, people don't like movies that preach to you. But it had a great message.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because the hallucinations they had would scare me the fuck away from drugs. It would be, this was better than Dare.
Yeah, I guess so.
Although, it's cheaper than Dare.
Well, Dare didn't do anything. Dare told you what to look for.
Yeah.
I remember being in school and the DARE drug officer would come in and he'd have a whole board of what all the drugs look like. And I'm like, oh, okay. Picking them up. Oh, I better get that, you know?
It's easier to track them down when you know what they look like.
Yeah, exactly. But this was fun. It was a lot of disco
and roller disco.
Yeah, and Rudy Ray Moore rapping over disco.
Yes, and, as the Disco Godfather, that is your job.
Yeah, but what kind of plastic surgery did he have? He looked like his face was just gonna melt off, you know.
I don't know. I don't know if he was like drinking a lot back then or what the deal was, but
just looked weird, man.
Yeah. Did they even have facial plastic surgery in the late 60s, early 70s?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I didn't remember like.
Well, this was 79.
Oh, 79. Yeah, I was thinking it was early 70s.
No, they've had plastic surgery for a long time, you know.
Yeah. So Rudy Ray Moore plays a police officer who has left the department to become a famous DJ.
at the Blueberry Hill Club. Disco Club.
Which, when I looked up, when I saw that it was the Blueberry Hill Club, I was like, oh, is this the one from the song? And, you know, I found my thrills on Blueberry Hill. The was it Chubby Checker song that?
No. It's not Chubby Checker.
Who sang that?
Fats Domino.
It's Fats Domino. I don't know why I thought that.
Okay. Yeah, I met Fats Domino many times. You know, he used to buy hair pieces from us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and when I talked to him, he was sitting in his chair, and he had a gold necklace with a huge biplane on it. And you can see a bunch of pictures of him. If you just look on the internet for Chubby Checker with his big biplane necklace.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah, I'll have to really check that cool. out.
Yeah, I just, when I saw Blueberry Hill, I thought, is this the song? And so, like, I looked it up, and the Blueberry Hill that's being referenced is in St. Louis, Missouri. There was a place he played regularly.
Yeah, Blueberry Hill was, I mean, the song is from, like, 1958 or something like that.
Yeah, and the place is still open. Like, I looked it up, and I was, like, really surprised. But this is not that Blueberry Hill. This is just a place in L.A. that was called that. But I love every part of the filming to see, like, the 70s L.A. You know, like, I love that look and the cars and everything from back then. So it's just, I love that time trip. And plus the disco club. Like, you get to see.
I was living there then.
Really?
Yeah, I left in 78.
Oh, that's right, because you had been babysat by Luke Skywalker.
Oh, yeah, but that was in much like 73 or so when that happened.
But it's great because I love the idea that this guy was a successful cop that left the police department to go be a famous DJ, that he has become the disco godfather. But when he's DJing and his nephew goes out and smokes some PCP, and it fucks his mind up, he comes back in the club, he's all fucked up, and they're like, and I love the Rudy Ray Moore lines of call an ambulance, that whole scene where he tells the girl exactly what to do because this guy's tripped out on drugs. And I don't know. There's just so much I love in the disco scene. Like, even the dancing and stuff, it's just, it's such a time trip. Like, I just love seeing all that. After his nephew gets some help and is put into a hospital, we go through this psych ward of people who have been on PCP. This is the terrifying part, because you see this woman who's cradling like a baby doll. And she's all fucked up. And so the doctor tells her story of how she got high and cooked her baby and served it to her family.
Yeah.
That was stronger than any DARE message I ever saw. Don't do drugs or you'll cook your baby.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. The hallucinations were kind of ridiculous.
They were my favorite. I love seeing like the crazy woman. Yeah, like you see this, like, I think they call her the Angel of Death in the credits. That she only did like three movies I saw, and is just fucking batshit looking, like just dancing around with this white shit on her face, looking like some sort of almost voodoo priestess.
Right. Yeah, and the funny thing is, these people were like, oh, well, your medicine hadn't done anything to our baby, so we're going to stand around her and freak her out even more with the religious freaks.
Yeah, so they're like, I mean, it almost gave me an Exorcist vibe that they were doing to the girl who had taken all the PCP. And so Disco Godfather starts working with the police again, because he wants to rid the community of PCP and all the people that are dealing it. But the person dealing it is a council person in LA. Like, I think that was his title. He was like a council person for their district.
He owned a basketball team. Oh,
that's right. He owned the basketball team, and I forgot council about that whole
person.
I thought for some reason he was like on the city council.
No,
I don't know. I guess when they were talking about the mayor in that one scene, I was like, oh, that's what he does. Cause I kind of lost that whole part.
No. So he owned a basketball team. And the reason why he made Rudy Ray Moore's Disco Godfather's nephew got him on PCP. So he couldn't get drafted in the NBA. So we could get him on his basketball team. It was real convoluted, you know?
Yeah. It was just real wild. Cause like he goes in, but he comes out of like rehab by the end of the movie because he gets to go in on the raid that Disco Godfather does against the NBA owner.
The Kung Fu Raid.
The Kung Fu Raid. But we have like a whole lot of fucking weird scenes. We have him having sex. We have him finding the cop that's the mole. And then when they discover that the cop's the mole, they don't arrest him. They let him go and he commits suicide at his home.
It was weird, dude.
Yeah, it was weird. But I don't know. Like, I dug all of it, even though I was obviously confused through some of it. Because Rudy Ray Moore is just a great character. And this one had, like, more story than some of his other flicks. So
the fight scenes were hilariously bad.
Oh, yeah. The one outside the PCP house, a guy walks up and he's like, hey, what's going on? And then just starts fighting with Rudy Ray Moore because he had better
variety. I'll help you out.
Yes, that's the line. I'll help you out. Oh, shit. That was so good. How much Rudy Ray Moore had you seen before this?
Well, I've seen Dolomite.
Yeah, I'd seen Dolomite and the Tornado. What is it? Human Tornado?
Yeah, I haven't seen like that sequel. Yet.
Yeah. And then that's why I was curious if you had seen the fourth one, because I put that down for the week after next, because it's about the devil's son-in-law. So I'm looking forward to that. But in the documentary I saw on Rudy Ray Moore, you just saw all the people who were super big fans of his. And obviously the clip we played was from Arsenio Hall in the 90s. He had been sampled on tons of rap albums. And, you know, Eddie Murphy has done a movie that's on Netflix about Rudy Ray Moore's making of Dolomite and the coming of his character. In the documentary, they're saying that back in the day, Eddie Murphy used to host Rudy Ray Moore parties where they would watch all his movies. He would just have people over and they would just watch all the Dolomite and Disco Godfather.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, he was definitely an icon back then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, just listening to like Snoop Dogg. One of the quotes from the movie is, if there was no Rudy Ray Moore, there'd be no Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, well, you know, he's probably right. Now, Disco Godfather, during all the disco scenes, kept chanting, put your weight on it.
Yes.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know. It's just a chant. Put your weight on it.
Put your weight on it. What?
Hey, it was a chant. He also had a song in there that he did, because I was looking it up and it was like Sherman Eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was what, because I was like, is this a song? I looked it up. Yeah. Hell yeah, it is.
Sherman Eyes.
But Rudy Ray Moore, before he was an actor, was a singer. Like, he had albums and stuff that weren't necessary. Like, before he did comedy, he did, I don't know. It was just R&B back in the day.
Right.
And what white people would do would find their albums and then do covers of those albums. So like Pat Boone was covering black artists, and that's how he became popular. It wasn't anything that he had done because he had the power of the radio airwaves. People would play a white artist over a black artist covering the song. So,
well, that's Rudy, Elvis did too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly why they became famous, because they were just covering songs other people had already done. So, and Led Zeppelin.
Well, look, Elvis never wrote a fucking song.
Yeah.
It was all fucking covers or songs other people wrote. He didn't write shit.
Yeah. Have you seen that Priscilla movie yet?
No.
I'm kind of curious how, because I've heard word that Priscilla had things changed in the movie to portray her perspective more. And I'm curious how much of Elvis they really dip into in that, other than him pursuing a 14-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, meh. I'll watch it eventually. You know, it's, what's her name, directed it.
Oh, yeah, Sofia Coppola.
Yeah, yeah. So just as long as she's not acting, I'll probably watch it.
It's no Godfather 3, man.
Yeah, definitely. So what else have you been watching?
I finished one of my favorite DC series of all time, Doom Patrol on HBO on HBO Max.
Yeah, I have one episode left.
Oh, wow. Oh, fuck, dude. Then I don't want to talk about the ending at all. I'll just talk about how much I loved it.
Yeah, it's great. I told you. you had stopped watching it, and I said, you better start watching it.
Yeah, and I'm so glad I got back to it. I don't know why. I just kind of it was a show Shelby and I were watching, and then I think she fell off, and I just wanted to finish it, and so I just did it by myself. And it was a comic I'd read in the 90s that was put out by DC, but DC had, at the time, wanted to do away with like the comics code, and so they did a line called Vertigo that was, it was superheroes and supernatural stuff that was done in a more adult tone. And Doom Patrol was one of those books that shifted from like a cartoony kind of team that was trying to do stuff to this really fucking weird book that I was like, this is something that will never get adapted, yet here we are. Because Grant Morrison wrote some of the weirdest shit in there with some of the weirdest villains, but used all that core history of the Doom Patrol from the 60s, which was just kind of like this weird stuff where he had this guy who was in charge that was in a wheelchair, and he just had these oddballs that were in this group. And after they had put out Doom Patrol, months later, Marvel puts out the X-Men about this guy in a wheelchair who is in charge of a bunch of misfits. And the creator of the Doom Patrol had said early on, he was like, Marvel just fucking stole Doom Patrol and called it the X-Men. He's like, that's what it was. And within the last few years of his life, he kind of backed off of that and said, you know, like, there's a lot of similar shit in comics. X-Men is nothing like what Doom Patrol is. But it just felt at the time like they were stealing what we had been doing. Mm-hmm. So, it felt like, you know, I created something and Stan Lee just ripped it off. But he was doing that book early on with someone else. And in the Marvel method, you just kind of pitch a story to an artist. The artist draws everything, and then the writer comes back and adds the dialogue to tell the story. So the artist has just as much influence on the story as the writer does in Marvel. So, I mean, you could blame Stan Lee, but you could also like jump on Jack Kirby too. I can't believe we had a series that was so fucking good that I look at Brendan Fraser and go, this guy needs to win an award for Robot Man. Yeah. I think that was probably, I mean, everyone in that show was really good. Like, I've never been a fan of Rita Farr in the comics, but the actress who pulled that off was amazing. April Bowerbury, I believe is her name.
Yeah.
Crazy Jane, another weird concept superhero of, it's a child with so many multiple personalities in her head, but they all each have their own superpower. And if she could get her mentality together, she can use those superpowers to fight things. And then you have Larry Trainer, who's the Negative Man, who has this thing that lives inside him. He was a victim of an Air Force crash that caused him to just hold all this radiation in his body. So he, anyone he gets near, he has to keep these bandages on that basically help suppress his radiation. And he could never be seen. He's like deformed. And the worst of it all is Larry grew up gay. And in the military, he found someone who he loved, and that love was lost. And now that he's a guy who is completely bandaged and covered, he can't even love himself. So it's weird to have a superhero story about a character who just can't love himself, and you root for Larry. That's the thing I loved about the show, was like, you just want Larry to have that happy ending, because he's just in such a bad place, and you love that guy. He's such a good friend, and at times, like, you see him and Rita becoming the best of friends through the show.
And then the one who is actually the only real superhero,
Cyborg.
Cyborg, he's self-loathing and gets rid of his tech. You know, it's really interesting.
Yeah. It's so wild because, you know, like in standard Teen Titans comics, you know, Vic had problems because he had lost a bit of his humanity, and he may have an issue in one panel, but in Doom Patrol, he's going to have a whole story arc dealing with it. So it was always such a big jump. And what was wild is Cyborg wasn't in a lot of those 90s Doom Patrol comics. So this was all written and improved upon and added to. I just love it all. The thing that bummed me out is there is a multiverse episode that takes place where, but it takes place in the Teen Titans show. And in the Teen Titans, Gar, Beast Boy, goes through the multiverse and sees Doom Patrol, Stargirl. He sees all the different TV shows, but he sees the writer of Doom Patrol, Grant Morrison, who wrote this in his comic. When it shoots to a panel, Grant Morrison is looking at you and goes, "I can see you." And they recreated that in the Titans episode. I keep calling it Teen Titans, but it was Titans because it was more violent than anything I'd ever seen.
My buddy was a writer on Teen Titans.
Oh, really? Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fuck, I love Teen Titans, man. That was like
he wrote on Teen Titans, and he wrote on what's that one show? Well, anyways, I'll tell you later.
Okay. This is so weird, but when weird is executed and done well, that's a Doom Patrol. And I really, really hope that James Gunn brings this crew back, because this was, even though we had, like, what you'll see in the final episode go somewhere, I want to see what James could do, because I'd love to see him bring the Doom Patrol back in this form, like this team. It was just great.
Yeah, like maybe a movie.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I mean, I just want to see him interact with other heroes. Like, I loved when Gar would show up and they'd have Beast Boy, because Beast Boy and Cyborg have always been buddies in the cartoons, in the comics. And I love the little catchphrase. I love when he does a booyah. You know, it's just it little bullshit shit like that I remember from the cartoon. And what was it? I think it was in the Snyder version of Cyborg that got cut out of the Justice League. Like, Ray Fisher was like, "We're not doing Booyah here. We're doing a whole different Cyborg. We have a whole different take." And then it just completely kind of fell apart. Like, that whole character just didn't work in that movie.
Yeah, I remember the other show he worked on. He was a writer for Person of Interest.
Oh, fuck. That's a superhero show in itself.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's got the crazy Jim Caviezel in it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a little nut job now. I'm just like, watching that show has made me do a deep dive into Doom Patrol. I found I had the Silver Age Omnibus, so I'm like reading the early beginnings of Doom Patrol from the 60s. And, man, it's just so great to go back to the beginning. I think I'm going to do a full read from 60s to now, because I love it.
Yeah. I'm really enjoyed the hell of the show. And I can't wait to finish it up. We can talk about it next week.
Yeah, I want to see what your thoughts are on the ending, because it's just very interesting. It's very interesting. It's probably the best thing I could recommend this year as far as television.
So what else have you been watching?
I spent the holiday watching Mystery Science Theater. I'm a big Mystery Science Theater fan. They did a 48-hour marathon to coincide with the end of their Kickstarter. But they actually created their own crowdfunding app. So they got rid of Kickstarter, built their own app with money they got from the last Kickstarter, and then came short. They did not meet their goal. And it really sucks. They were pushing for a lot, though. They only got like 65% of their goal, and they were pushing for a lot of shows and a few more changes. When they saw that they were coming to Thanksgiving and they weren't even 50% there, they reconfigured everything in their Kickstarter to cut out money, to save money, and still didn't meet it. So that they were able to trim $800,000 off their goal and still didn't meet it. So a lot of people were pissed off. I hate when the fandoms get really shitty. Like, you know, there were people who were posting, well, I didn't get my Kickstarter, you know, jacket or hat or something. You know, it was like a month or 2 or 3 months late. So I'm not going to, you know, pitch in, or I'm just people shitting on stuff for people trying to be creative. You know, right. I don't know. I hate it, but I love the Turkey Day Marathon because I get to see some Mystery Science Theater I may have missed, or reruns of some of my favorite shows. But that's about it. That's all I've really been doing.
Oh, yeah. I watched a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
I watched American Gangster.
Oh, Denzel Washington?
Yeah. And the other guy.
The other guy.
Gladiator.
Oh, yeah. Russell Crowe.
Yeah, Russell Crowe. I'd never seen it before. Holy fuck, was it good.
I've never seen it either. Wow, that fucking cast, man.
Yeah, it was fucking incredible.
Carla Gugino, Josh Brolin, Idris Elba's in this.
Yeah, not very long, but he's in there.
All right, well, it's on Max. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Then I watched a really cool movie called Upgrade. Have you seen this? Oh, yes.
That is an awesome movie.
Wow. I loved Upgrade. It's like it's a low budget sci-fi film.
And you know what?
That is just amazing.
Yeah, it gave me Venom vibes. You know, the way Tom Hardy's pulling off Venom, it gave me those exact vibes, and it was done way better, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. Yeah, I had a good time watching it. Then I started watching this show on Max called Strange Evidence. And it's a documentary about all this stuff captured on cameras that they then try to say, well, is it a chupacabra? What is it? You know, stuff like that. You know, is it Bigfoot? Is it this? No, it's these guys in a fucking monkey suit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of cool. Yeah. You know, you know,
it's like 8 seasons of this. Wow.
Yeah, I know. Then I started watching Hacks.
About the comedy writer.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, it's won a bunch of Emmys. The girl who is a comedy writer, that's Lorraine Newman's daughter.
No way.
Yeah.
Hannah Adebinder, I guess that's
her name. Hannah Adebinder. That's Lorraine Newman's daughter.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think she's just great. It, you know?
It, Wikipedia also says that her uncle's Paul Newman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know that. Wow.
Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah, I know Jen Staske is one of the writers on that show because she used to write for Parks and Rec, and she had been promoting this, and I still haven't watched it.
Dude, the show's really good.
It's like two seasons?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it, you know. And it won a bunch of Emmys, so, you know, other people like it too.
Yeah.
Then I watched The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp from 1943. That was on Max, too. It was pretty good, you know. It was from 1943, and I'd never seen it. I've always heard about it. But real enjoyable. It shows a guy from World War One all the way through, you know, when he, World War Two, because they don't know what happens. It's 1943. So, yeah, it was kind of interesting.
Wow, that was, well, it's on Max, but it's also free on Roku if anyone wants to check that out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Worth watching. I finished Eastbound and Down.
Kenny Powers, man, what'd you think?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Definitely the redneck hero, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, and what's cool is, like, he's based that off a real athlete.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and what I think probably one of my favorite things in there is him taking his kids shooting, and then he named his jet ski the panty dropper.
Mm-hmm. I think it was funny. He buys his kids a wolf.
Yes.
Who does that?
Dude, when I was married before, my ex, her ex-husband had bought their kids a half wolf hybrid dog. Yeah. But they had also bought a bunch of inbred Dalmatians.
Mm-hmm.
And so you figure out which one bites first. It was the Dalmatian. The Dalmatian bit her oldest kid right through the ear, like tore a hole in his ear.
Yeah. They usually can't hear Dalmatians.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of them are deaf. And it's an inbreeding thing because Disney made the breed so popular that people were breeding them like crazy.
That's why they made them fire dogs, because they can't hear the sirens.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. I didn't think about that.
Then I watched Body of Lies. Which is really, really good. Also, Russell Crowe and now Leo and Russell Crowe. It's a real good movie, man.
Dude, I had not seen this. Got Mark Strong and Oscar Isaacs.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely check it out. It's on Max. I never even heard of it, but it's great.
Yeah, I like when you brought it up, I was like, I was thinking of a different movie, but this is a Ridley Scott bit.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Then on Thanksgiving, I watched A Christmas Story because it was Thanksgiving.
It's what you do.
Yeah, definitely. And because I don't have TBS.
Oh, yeah.
They used to play it over and over on Thanksgiving weekend.
I loved it, too. I would always put it on and, like, wrap gifts and shit.
Yeah, and it was always funny because we would always go on Christmas Day. We would always go to a Chinese restaurant.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we'd have breakfast at home, and then in the afternoon, go down the street to a Chinese restaurant.
Oh, man.
We would go to two places. We'd go to Bagelstein's or to the Chinese restaurant because both places were open.
Yeah.
Because there were Jewish and Chinese.
I do love the drive on Thanksgiving to see the places that are open and how busy they are.
Right. But yeah, that was always fun. And then I watch a Japanese film called Hanzo the Razor, A Sword of Justice. Dude, this movie was fucking weird.
1972?
Fucking weird.
Yeah.
So this guy is like a policeman in Japan, you know, when they're years ago. And so there were some scenes that were kind of hard to watch. He would torture himself to know what it felt like when he tortured prisoners. And then he would, like, smash his dick with a hammer.
Oh, no.
To toughen it up. Because that way he had apparently the largest dick anyone had ever seen.
And now he has the flattest.
So he would rape these women. You know, because during the rape, all of a sudden they would say, "Don't stop, don't stop." And they would tell him anything. So he would rape women into falling in love with this big flat dick. So he could question them and get them to say what he wanted. He did this like twice. The first time he raped this woman on this rape boat he had. The second time he had these like guys that worked for him that put this naked woman in the basket and lowered her down on top of him. And he was, you know, fucking her, bouncing the basket and spinning it in the air, and it would go spin one way and then come back the other way, and she would confess to what was actually totally weird, dude. I'm not going to recommend this to anybody who may
it says it's be a sensitive. Yeah, it says it's a trilogy, so there's three of these
things. Yeah, I'm not going to watch the rest of them, I don't think. Maybe I will, but just fucking weird, dude.
I just going to say stop, hammer time.
Yeah, it was, you know, I was expecting, this looks like a cool Japanese film from the 70s with a martial artist. A samurai guy, but I didn't expect a pounded penis rape confessions. You know, anyways.
That's the weird, he had the basket spinning on him.
Yeah, well, it was like a rope that they put her in a net, you know, and she was spinning. It was fucking weird, dude. Then I started watching Telemarketers on Max.
How is that?
It's pretty good.
I've heard good things.
Yeah. These guys are working for this telemarketing. And have you ever done telemarketing?
Yes, I did it. It was one of my high school jobs.
Yeah, I worked at a couple of places. And, you know, that's how it was.
See, that's what I'm curious is I worked for a place when I was in high school where you would just cold call you know, you would get people, and it was for the Texas State Trooper Association.
Well, and that's what this is about, how all these different associations were getting people to call. The second place I worked at was a window company.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the second place was so crazy. The guy who ran the place could cut in on your a phone and talk to you, you know, and say, hey, what are you doing? You know, but that dude was a pimp. So he'd have girls come in and he would cut in on your call after you finished and say, so this is Nancy. And if you've got $80, she can blow you during break if you want.
What?
Yeah.
That's fucking wild.
That's how fucking wild it was.
Yeah, and my office was never that wild.
Yeah. The place I worked at, everybody was on coke. Everybody was getting high constantly. It was like that, the place in the telemarketer show. So,
see, everyone in my place was like out of high school or was in high school. Like the guy that was the manager, I was a junior in high school because I was able to drive there, I remember. Mm-hmm. And this guy was like a senior from North Mesquite, and he was a big fucking muscle head. He played football and shit, and he ran that place. And he just hired other high school kids. I'm trying to remember how much we made. I think we made like $60 a day, and it was like maybe 2 or 3 hours on the phones. I mean, it was quite a bit. But you were selling these stickers that were part of a fake association. There was no.
Yeah, that's what this whole show was about.
And people would buy them because they think, well, if I have this on my car and I get pulled over, I would get out of a ticket. And and most of the time people would be like, I don't know what the fuck that sticker is. I'd still give them a ticket. But yeah, you could, if you could make one sale, I mean, it was huge, but you just had to, I mean, I remember nights of just doing nothing and realizing I've not made out for sales. I'm not a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun because all these dudes partied all the time. So, I mean, I drank a lot in high school. And so I would go pick up beer because they all knew this one place that would never card. So I could go at 16 and just buy whatever. And so I remember going to buy beer with one of the guys. And then we came back to the office and you could just drink at your desk if you wanted to.
I mean,
it was like no big deal. And so the guy I went with goes, hey, man, I'm going out. Who all wants to go with me? He was just like, he was already pretty drunk. So it was like, no, I'm good. But a couple of guys went with him. And the next day we come back into the office and he's got these bandages on his forehead. And he had gone to some party that was like it was like in another city. So it was like not his high school. And so he started a fight with some of the people there and some dude smashed a bottle over his forehead. And if you've ever seen what a real bottle will do to a forehead, it's fucked up because it's just scars. It just puts just cuts all across your forehead. And because it's your forehead, you bleed a lot. So he peeled off the bandage and showed us like the damage that was done to his forehead. And even after it healed, he was fucked. I mean, it fucked his forehead up bad. But yeah, that was the kind of shit that happened in my telemarketing place.
Yeah, dude, telemarketing was totally scammy back in the day.
Yeah, it was just good, quick cash.
Mm-hmm. So I also watched this horror movie called Oracle on Max, and it was really interesting. It was about this girl, and she was black, and she went to like babysit at this plantation house, and just fucking weird fucking movie, man. You know, there's like a ghost of these plantation lady and these old slave ghosts and stuff like that. It was really fucking weird. It just came out this year, though.
I was going to say, it says it's 2023. It's got Heather Graham in it. It's on Max and Hulu.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. It's not great, you know, but definitely worth checking out. Then I started watching The Peacemaker.
Oh, yeah. Now, I can't say The Peacemaker is a great adaptation because his character in that show is that story has never really been told. But he is that kind of like wackadoo person who will kill everyone to get peace. That's right. Kind of his motto.
Yeah, I've only watched one episode, but I'm enjoying it so far.
So good.
And Robert Patrick's great.
Man, he's fucking fantastic, like, throughout the whole series. I can't wait till you finish, because I really want to get into it. I might rewatch it so we can discuss Peacemaker again.
Then this morning, I watched Critters for the first time.
Love Critters.
Yeah, and I thought it was weird. The kid turns out to be Gordon on the Orville.
Yeah, exactly. And who plays his mom?
E.T.'s mom.
It's Elliot's mom. And Billy Zane with a full head of hair in it.
Right, right.
I met Dee Wallace at a Texas Frightmare weekend, the last one I was able to go to. She is like one of the best fucking guests you could ever see at a horror con. Mm-hmm. Like she used to go by Dee Wallace Stone because she was married. And then I saw her doing a panel, and she was talking about her ex because like he had passed away. And she really like, she gets into the story and she started to get choked up. It was like, you know, we're just doing a horror panel, you know, and she was just kind of like just spilling it. You know, she was just kind of going through it then. And then I noticed that she just changed it to Dee Wallace now. But I was leaving my room to go down to the con, and she got out of her room, which was like right across the hall from mine. And I was like, oh, my God, that's Dee Wallace. Like, to me, she will always be Elliot's mom.
Right.
Like she, you know, and so she's like, hi, how are you? Are you having a good con? Are you, you know, and she's just like all nice and talkative and stuff. And so we rode the elevator down. She's like, you have a good show. And I was like, oh, Elliot's mom. That's so cool.
Yeah. So that was kind of funny. And, you know, the Gordon, you know, the kid that.
Yeah.
He grew up to be Gordon. Did you know the Gordon guy, he married the commander on the Orville?
Yes.
For like a year or 6 months or something.
It was a blink of an eye. It was very short. So I can imagine that's got to be weird on set.
Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. She's fine enough to be worth doing that for.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. It's weird, too, because, like, he has to play the role of his friend who was the guy who was married to her for a bit. But right. I think the story might be the same, that she cheated in the show and in real life.
Well, maybe that's her thing. Who knows?
Adrian Padalecki, I think that's how you pronounce her last name. I've met her at a show. She is fucking tall. I was surprised how tall she was meeting her in real life, but she's fantastic. She played Mockingbird in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and was supposed to get a spinoff I wanted to see, but then she got to be in the first John Wick and fight Keanu in that bedroom fight, which is one of the best fights in that whole series.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Okay, any news?
Oh, fuck no. No, I don't have any news.
Yeah, me neither. No news on Thanksgiving.
Actually, no, I did. Did you see, is it Sid or Marty Croft that died? I'm trying to remember.
Marty.
Yeah. Like, he passed away. Do you remember all those? Did you watch those Sid and Marty Croft shows growing up?
Well, hell yeah.
Fuck yeah. H.R. Puffin stuff and Sigmund the Sea Monster. I loved this, like, Sigmund and the Sea Monster, because it was like this live action puppet, but I think it was Billy Barty that was in the suit. Mm-hmm. And these kids just run around, you have adventures and shit. And then when he wanted to hide, he would just become seaweed.
Lidsville?
Dude, Lidsville is so weird. It is so weird. My favorite, did you ever see the Mr. Show parody of H.R. Puffin stuff?
Drugachusetts.
That's it, man. That is their That is like a top five sketch of theirs.
Oh, I no, that's the only thing I remember from Mr. Show.
Oh, you don't remember? I think his name was Billy, the kid that was burned. And the band comes in and they like want to play for it. Oh, shit.
All I remember is Drug-a-chusetts.
Oh, shit. There's the sketch with Billy who's been burned. And so it's David Cross in a bed where you just see his head. But the rest of his body is like a puppet. And it looks like burned sausages as his hands and his feet. And they just make him move around. And so his make-a-wish was to have this band come play for him. And when they see him, they're so disturbed that they can't play.
Yeah. That was
another. There's another one. The other, like, to me, this is what the best sketch of all time is. Dave Cross plays a kid who's come to a religious, it's kind of like a TV evangelist where Bob Odenkirk is the preacher, but he's preaching for Satan. And he has a wife, so it's basically the PTL, but they're preaching for Satan. So they bring out David Cross, who plays this kid, and he goes, "What can we do for you?" And he goes, "How can we heal you?" And he goes, "I'm just lazy." Like that's his bit, is he's just lazy. He goes like, "Well, how can we bring Satan back into your heart?" And he goes, "I would like to see bestiality, please." Like he just is asking for the weirdest devil shit. I'll get you links to those, man. Those are the best sketches.
Okay, so next week, we're going to watch 10 to Midnight from 1983.
Yes. Back to some more Charles Bronson.
We'll see you guys next week on the show.
See ya.
Have a good one.